amazing when you see that, those images. I've seen those images now 4 times. I still can't get over the beauty and wonder of creation. And Stephen mentioned, we'll talk about a Bible verse in a little bit. It just screams that there's something behind that intricacy and that beauty. If any of us came downstairs this morning and we had to have alphabet cereal, I don't even know if that still exists, but if we had to have that alphabet cereal and there was a letter spelled out on the counter that said, I love you, all of us would know somebody orchestrated those letters because they wouldn't just accidentally fall out of the box. And yet the intricacy that would make that happen is nowhere close to the intricacy that makes the world happen. And yet we go, oh yeah, yeah, it's the world. You know, this is a custom designed place where God says to people who live in, hey, I love you. And that's because I've given you a great crib. Just know that. All this stuff comes together. Well, over on the other side of the crib we call home, over on the other side of planet Earth, Brian Wells is right now, along with a team who are doing some justice work on our behalf over there. And we're going to actually take up an offering a bit, but before we do that and I do some offering disclaimer thing, Brian actually left us a voicemail on the other side of the globe. And let's tune into him and take a look at what he had to say, and also this pasty picture of him.
Hey, this is Brian. Yes. Yes, that Brian. And don't call me the other guy. I'm over here with our justice team in South Asia. And I've actually been thinking that about how this weekend you're talking there about our planet as home. And I've been thinking about that because I've been spending this last week wading through some pretty crowded, grimy streets with about 13 million other people. All of us just seem kind of gasping for breath. I think it takes about 2 hours to get anywhere here. By the time you get there, your clothes are all black and your tongue tastes like you've been licking the exhaust pipe on a lawnmower. But it's been worth it. And that's the reason for this phone call. I know you're getting ready to pass the offering bags. And sometimes when we do this, we talk about how our generosity as a community feels some pretty cool stuff that God calls us to. Well, I wanted all you revolutionaries to know what your money's been up to this last week. On Tuesday night, our team here executed a well-planned raid on a city brothel that's known for dealing in underage girls. They made their way in posing as customers, and with police backup, they were able to escape with 5 girls to safety and have the pimps arrested. It appears at least three of these girls are minors, possibly even younger than 12. All the girls are now in a safe house where our team's social workers are now stepping in. Okay, here's the shameless offering introduction. This radical kind of stuff just doesn't happen without people like you following God's command to love. Slaves are set free, children rescued, the weak defended, and the abusers stopped because people like you love in the way that you do. There. How's that for an offering introduction?
And God, we thank you for things that are happening around the world that are positive, like little girls, as few as they are, yet you've created them and you've not created them to serve in the sex slave industry. And so we just thank you that you're giving them freedom right now and that we get to be a part of that in some way. And I ask that you'd help us to see you in ways that we've never imagined for the rest of our time today. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen. You know, ushers, you can come forward now. That's cool. A number of years ago, Crossroads was meeting in rented facilities. I'm just curious, how many people are here who used to be in rented facilities with us? Any hands come up? Okay, a few of us. You know, many of us might have been on the setup crew. When we were over in Clark Montessori, we would set the thing up, and it wasn't an ideal location, but we lived there. It wasn't ideal having kids club in a cafeteria, but we learned how to take folding tables and stand them up and put drapes over them to divide all the stuff and everything. And then when we came over here, we sort of had this custom designed home for ministry. And then we put an addition onto our home, which is where we are right now. But none of us who are back in the rental facilities would ever want to go back there. It was just hard. It was grueling, especially if you were volunteering. It was difficult. But here's the thing. If a fire happened to sweep through this place, we could do it. We could go someplace else. We've gone to the Cintas Center a number of years ago. We had one big, huge service, and it was hard. It was difficult, but we could do it. We could, if we had to go someplace else, we could do that because this is a home that's we're adaptable for. But the planet Earth that we call home, if it goes, there is no place else you can go. There's no other planet. There's no other galaxy. There's no other universe. Even if there's multiple universes, like scientists are trying to say, which that doesn't make sense to me, multiple universes. But even if there are, there's not a single shred of evidence that you could ever, any of us could ever live. In fact, there's barely a shred of evidence that any life of any sort lives on any kind of planet. And so when you think about that, you realize, wow, this home that God has put me in is a custom designed home. Creation is a custom designed home for you. There's no place else where you could go. Whenever you talk about creation, you always get a little tension because you wonder, okay, are you going to take the Bible literally? Are you taking the Bible figuratively? You know, you got evolutionists who talk about things evolving without any understanding of God being involved at all. And then you have the creationists who say, no, it was seven literal 24-hour days, 8,000 years ago. And you got creationists who don't really agree with anything with the evolutionists and vice versa. And then you got literalists of the Bible talking with figurativists of the Bible. They don't agree with much. And then there's people who believe in theistic evolution and people who believe in agnostic or atheistic evolution. But whether you're an atheist, a literalist, a figurativist, a creationist, a seven-dayist, a whateverist, whatever you are, there's one thing that everybody agrees on. That is that humans were created last. Humans came last to the party. In the book of the Bible, Genesis, the very first book, talks about how things were coming into order, whether you want to take it figuratively or literally. In the seventh day, it says God rested. And the sixth day, the last day he actually did anything creating, it was men and women he created. First there was water, first there was land, there was the atmosphere, there was reptiles, there was birds. It details all these things. And then at the very end, it says that there were people who were put there. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. One is, I think God just set up the home for us. He set it up. He created creation so that we would always be able to see there was a creator based on something that is created. And it was perfectly designed for us with all of these ecosystems generating the right oxygen and all the beautiful things for us to look at. God made a custom designed home. Francis Crick is an extreme spiritual skeptic, Nobel Peace Prize winner and co-founder of DNA or discoverer of DNA. And here's what he said. He said, an honest man, armed with all the knowledge available to us now, could only state that in some sense, the origin of life appears at the moment to be almost a miracle. Can't quite say it is, but appears to be at the moment almost a miracle. So many are the conditions which would have had to have been satisfied to get it going. He's like right on the edge of saying, okay, there's a creator. Can't quite bring himself to it, but man, that's pretty strong language. 1.6 million different species on planet Earth. 1.6 million. It's amazing to me because God not only is an incredible engineer making everything all tie together really well, he's an incredible artist. They don't all need to be there. I mean, if he just wanted to create something to create oxygen, he could have just had one brand of tree. Or he just wanted to create something to take worms out of the ground, he could have just one kind of bird. I mean, all these different flavors because he's an artist. He's an artist. 1.6 million. Edward O. Wilson, who was a two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard professor, had been at Harvard like forever and ever, in a book, Creation. He calls himself a humanist, doesn't really give much any credibility at all to the idea of a God. But here's what he says. He says, if a miracle is a phenomenon that we cannot understand, then all species are something of a miracle. God creates things in miraculous way, all of them beautiful. A couple books that you might want to look at if this is interesting to you is Lee Strobel's A Case for the Creator. Also, Francis Collins, who chaired the team that was the first one to map the human genome, has one on the language of God. Creation is, it's a home that's custom designed for you. There's no place else where we could live. In the book of Matthew, chapter 6, Jesus would use metaphors about creation to help us to know about God. And here's one thing that he says. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about your clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow? They do not labor or spin, and yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. That's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire. Will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Jesus is speaking with people who weren't dying of starvation. And here in Cincinnati, no one dies of starvation in Cincinnati or dies of the exposure to the elements. And he says this, you can be sure that you don't have to worry about these things. Look at the birds. Man, these little creatures are simplistic. You don't see them dropping out of the sky in starvation. And look at these beautiful flowers, how they're clothed. I mean, kings can't be clothed as beautiful as them. And Jesus says, you learn from creation how much God cares about you. And the Bible has all kinds of metaphors that are earth nation metaphors to help us to know who God is. When I go in nature, I see and learn things about God. Some of us, when you go in nature, you intuitively feel really, really close to God. I don't really feel all that close to God just because I'm in nature. I feel mosquitoes and humidity when I go in nature. There are some environments that I really feel close with God that if you went in those environments, all you would feel is annoyance and sweat. All of us have different environments where we sense God more than others. But in nature, all of us can see and learn about God. Talks about the mountains in the Bible, that God is so big. You see mountains? He's so vast, his feet just rest on mountains. The metaphor of water and river is used, and people understand there's a level of unpredictability about God. Last weekend, I was whitewater rafting, and all these rafts were doing the same routine, like, multiple times, and they were fine, but our raft guide got us thrown twice. Now, I keep trying to blame her. Maybe it was her fault. It was her fault. Let me just say that. It was her fault. Probably it was her fault. But the fact of the matter is, rivers, they're unpredictable. That was the real issue. Rivers, and my neck is still sore right now. I got thrown out of the raft. I lost my wedding ring in the rushing water. My neck is still sore. And the river reminds me that God is unpredictable. He is. You try to figure out God, try to create a nice, safe thing. No, God is unpredictable. See, our home tells us about our Creator. When you look at our home, you can learn something about God. A while ago, I was out in out west and rented a Harley and cruised around the Grand Canyon. How many of us have ever been to the Grand Canyon? Anyone been to the Grand Canyon? It is grand. Let me tell you what, it is grand. And being a person, in fact, it's a canyon too. It's amazing how that vote goes together. But I, as I said, I don't necessarily, you know, feel close to God just because I'm in nature. But I'll tell you what, I was stunned by what I experienced. Utterly stunned. I would have thought in this age of high resolution photography, when you've got nice big books that are on coffee tables, in this age of IMAX theater and seeing all kinds of nature stuff, in this age of high def plasma TVs, I really thought that that really captured all of what you could see. No, it doesn't. When you go to the Grand Canyon, it is unfreaking believable. It just goes on and on. Your mind can't draw it in. I went up and parked the bike a couple of other Harleys that were there, and I had to go to the other side of the parking lot to throw something away. And on my way back, the other thing about the Grand Canyon that's interesting is you'll hear more of languages you've never heard before when you go there. People from all over the world go there, and you're hearing languages you've never heard before. Fewer the people who speak English. Most of the languages are from other people. And it was strange because, you know, in Phoenix, most of the people have never even been in the Grand Canyon, just 2 hours away. But people from all over the world are flocking. And so when I'm walking back, it's a really strange scene. There's a group of people that I think were Japanese, a bunch of Japanese tourists. And they all had cameras that are around their necks. And they're all sitting there like taking pictures of the Harley Davidsons. They're all sitting there going like, click, they're looking at it, they're doing all this. And the one guy who's sort of the lead guy, he's pointing at me going, Harley, Harley. He's pointing, they're going, oh, Harley, Harley. And they're kind of going, they're taking all these pictures of, and this guy comes up and says, can you believe this? They're looking at this Harley, but right behind them is the Grand Canyon. They were fixated on the Harleys, which is totally understandable, but they were fixated on these things. I don't know who would be fixated with the Harley. It's ridiculous. Anybody would be fixated, but they were looking at these things, and maybe they're coming back from the Grand Canyon. But interesting thing. Why were they so fascinated with this? You know why? It's because the creation said something about the Creator. See, when you're from Japan and you take a look at a Harley Davidson, you know something about America. Okay, see a big Harley, you realize Americans, size matters. Size matters with Americans, it does. You see something that's ostentatious, it's not very utilitarian. We like ostentation, we like chrome things. Now, there's Harley knockoffs that Japan makes, but they're that isn't a reflection of their culture. It's a reflection of trying to get some of the American money to make Harleys copy like that. But what else do you see with a Harley? You see, no two Harleys alike. People want to customize it. And that's what Americans are like. We all want to feel special. We don't want to have what everybody else has. We don't want to do it. Well, I'm special. And so we have to have something of fashion or something we do. We Americans want to be special. You know, when you look at a Harley, the creation of a Harley, you know some of the creators of America. What else about Harleys? They're loud. They're loud and obnoxious. We are universally known in other countries, Americans, we are loud, obnoxious people. Harleys are loud and obnoxious. See, when you study the creation, you know something about the Creator. And when you look at anything in creation, you know something about God. You see He's an engineer. You see He's an artist. You see He's not utilitarian all the time. You see He's got this incredible imagination. Our services get different and they evolve, actually. They change. Next service will be different from last night's because we have a bunch of artists who do this. And we'll constantly tweak things here and there. It doesn't bother me at all that there might be some things in nature that evolve. God is an artist. Artists are always like doing something different. God likes to create. You know something about the Creator when you look at creation. Romans chapter 1 verse 20 says this. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen. Being understood from what has been made so that men and women are without excuse. You look at creation and you can see that there is a God and you can learn about Him. And our home, this creation, must be maintained. Our home, this creation, must be maintained. Maybe the reason why God put people here last is we had something to do, to maintain, to manage, to oversee. At least this is what the Bible says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, it says this. There he is. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, over all the creatures that move along the ground. And so God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. I don't think that development is bad or intrinsically harmful to the environment. Cities. I like cities. Cities are places where there are development. Cities. And the fact that we do this, like up in this little thing here, you got these cities. Beavers never create cities. Birds don't create cities. We think of cities. We think of developing things. We think of computer microchips. No ant will ever think of any drugs to get them better. We think of developing these things. These are all part of the Creator instilling something unique in us for us to do these things. So I don't think development is intrinsically bad or intrinsically negative to the environment. But what I do know is from that verse says that we are here to rule and subdue. And that does not mean put our thumb down and do whatever we want to the environment and the planet. The context of those verses means to oversee and to manage, to nurture. Those verses are sometimes used of God. Those words are used of God as a nurturer, someone who oversees. We're not put here to wipe everything out and decimate everything. We're here to manage it, to go forward, to progress, and to make sure that our home is being taken care of. Because there's only one, and it's a love letter that God has given to us. And I'll tell you, the home isn't being taken care of. It's not. My mother-in-law and I will joke sometimes that when she and I agree about something, it's just true. You know, there's various things we disagree about, but you know, when my mother-in-law and I agree about something, we just say, just don't even argue. It's just true. It's the way it is. Well, when Greenpeace and the National Association for Evangelicals agree that the world is devolving, it's like coming close to irreparable damage. It's just true. When Greenpeace and the National Association of Evangelicals, which historically consists of people that say, oh, whatever, planet, when they agree, look at the scientific data and say, oh, we're getting close to irreparable damage. It's just true. Book I read a number of years ago that got me started on this path. I didn't agree with everything. I don't agree with everything in virtually any book. But it's this book by Bill Bryson. Short history of nearly everything. Fascinating, fascinating book. And some things that he mentioned in there and some other things for you to think about. When you have shrimp, for every 1 pound of shrimp that's harvested, The bottom of the ocean floor is scraped, and there are 4 pounds of other fish and other matter that's killed in the process that just dumped over and wasted into the ocean. For every pound of shrimp, there's 4 pounds of other living organisms that are killed and just thrown away. Imagine what it would be like if you're in your backyard, if you've got nice environment there and plants and everything, or you're at Alt Park today, or you're at Yellowstone. Imagine if you're there and all of a sudden there's this huge metal thing that comes down and boom! It just drops out of heaven, lands on wherever you are, beautiful environment, and just starts scraping, indiscriminately scraping the entire topsoil off, all trees, all shrubs, everything there, deer, squirrels, your dog, raccoon. That's a raccoon gets scraped up. Raccoon, all of them, they just get scraped. All of a sudden, it goes back up in the sky. Like some things that whatever that was want to keep it. And all of a sudden, poof, all comes just plopping right down, right in front of your face. You would be outraged. You would be outraged. That happens every day. It's just we can't see it because it's under the ocean. It's starting to have ramifications on us. When I went to school in our cafeteria, we'll see if your cafeteria is the same, if you're still there or used to be there. We would have these sandwiches that had a certain meat. You know what that meat was called? What'd you call that meat? Mystery meat, right? You had no idea what it was, a mystery meat. Well, when you go and have, when you go have fish sticks, it's mystery fish. They don't really know what it is any longer. It used to be cod. Cod's about gone. It used to be gone. It used to be haddock. Haddock is about gone. Redfish. All these things are virtually gone. And so when you have a fish stick, it's like an amalgamation of some fishy matter is what it is. Because it's getting increasingly difficult to do that. Decades ago, when lobster farming started becoming popular and people liked lobster, it was very regular, very common to pull out lobsters weighing 20, 30 pounds. So it takes decades and decades for lobsters to grow. Today, you can't pull a lobster out of the ocean. It's over 2 pounds. They pull it out that small and they put them in an environment for it to grow. Now, hey, I eat lobster. Well, I eat shrimp. I don't like lobster that much. But I'm not saying here you can't eat these things or we shouldn't be eating these things. Got part of what God has put things like this is to take care of us and feed us. But the way in which we go about this is having major damage. 5% of our forests are burned every year. 5%. And then the new landmass that's smaller, 5% of them. 5%, that's ongoing. By the year 2025, 40% of everybody on the planet is going to live in a place where there's chronic water scarcity. 40%. And folks, these things are they're just not debatable. They're not. So in order to make ourselves think that we can do whatever we want, we're like, oh, well, you find scientists. No, you can't. You can find crackpots. You can find people that are funded by some think tank that wants to. Science is coming in so clear on this. From Greenpeace and the National Association of Evangelicals agrees on something, it's just truth. Speaking of truth, and let me tell you why I'm comfortable talking about this. I'm a little uncomfortable talking about this because Crossroads likes to stay away from politics. We are apolitical. But that doesn't mean that we stay away from things that people are making a political issue of. People make the environment a political issue. But from my standpoint, the environment is not a political issue. It is a biblical issue. God says, I've planted you here. But I know whenever you talk about something that someone's using for political gain, you're going to be accused of doing the politic thing. And here's one. I'll really be accused of this one, but just bear with me. I've historically not been a big Al Gore fan. Still, actually, right now, not all that much of an Al Gore fan. But I'm telling you what, you need to see Inconvenient Truth. I once saw that. And if just half of what he says is true in that, oh my goodness. And I happen to think it's way, way more. It was a stunning, stunning thing for us friends. The data is in. How we live our lives is adjusting to our... What would happen if, man, someone was knocking on your car and scraping your car? What would happen if someone was coming into your house and blowing cigar smoke into your draperies? What would happen if there was irreparable damage? What would happen? You would want to engage because your home mattered. You know, I love that song musically. I hate that song lyrically. I don't know if you understand what John Mayer is saying there in that song. What he's saying is, man, I'm just waiting because problem's too big for me. We're, me and my friends who really want change, we're just kind of waiting back, and as soon as like the right people get elected, or as soon as this, world's got change, but I'm just waiting. I'm waiting. Someday someone will do this. I'm just waiting. Man, that's awful, man. It's awful. It's awful. God says, don't wait for the world to change. Engage. I put you in the world to oversee it, man. I put you in the world to be about that. Man, if someone's working over my Harley, like with a ball peen hammer, you can like do a lot. You can like push in the seats and all. It's pretty durable. I mean, you start like hurting it irreparably. And I'm going to say, someone comes over and you got a Rembrandt in your house and they just start taking a razor blade to it. I'm just waiting for someone to do so. No! That's a beautiful creation. Man, you're home and there's a hole in your roof and stuff is therefore happening with elements and environment getting in and hurting things inside and all that stuff. I'm just waiting for the roofer pro bono to come by and deal with that. No, you're going up there and you're figuring that thing out. A few things for us to think about right now. 8%. Now, I'm going to talk to us as Americans because we live in this one little corner of the globe right now. And that's my last point, is that our home is a shared space with all people. Our home's a shared space with all people. All people are in this place. And no matter what your religious affiliation is, spiritual beliefs, nation that whose borders you're in, when it comes to the planet, God doesn't care any more for you just because you live in a certain geography than somebody else, just because your skin is different than somebody else's. He's created a home for all different people to be in. And as Brian talked about over in South Asia, when you go out and it tastes like you're licking a lawnmower, that affects our planet. In Bangladesh, you go to Bangladesh and you'll see people who are directing traffic in gas masks because the smog is so deep. So it goes all over the globe, but here in America, some interesting things, because we can't really control them, but we can have maybe some impact here. Things you might not know. You realize that, 8% of the world has a car. And in America, a third of our families have three cars. Now, again, that's not inherently sinful. I happen to have three cars. Just bought 1991 ancient car. I'm trying to justify it right now. For a third thing, and I actually don't believe that, that's inherently bad. I actually had some environmental reasons when we went after that. But I'm saying I got to look at stuff like this in my life, and I am doing this. I got to look at the level of consumption that I have in my life, and I'm asking you to do the same thing, to take a look at the level of consumption that you have in your life. We're unique here. I got coffee. I like to drink coffee all day when I'm here, and when I'm here working offices, I'm increasingly using a permanent mug that I refill as opposed to disposable stuff. I don't think all disposable stuff is wrong, but here's what I know. The average person in the world consumes 4 pounds of wood, 4 pounds of wood every day. That would be through the house they live in, or that'd be through, heating or paper, or 4 pounds of wood. The average American consumes 14 pounds of wood every single day. And so now, when I have a disposable cup that I use, I'm using the same one over and over and over again. So we have a team here that's trying to recycle stuff. When you walk out of here, you have a little recycle bin. You can kind of stick some recycled stuff in. If you're not going to take your program home and read it while you're on the toilet, just stick it in that thing as you walk out. Americans consume 20 million barrels of oil a day. 20 million barrels of oil a day. China consumes 5.6 million barrels of oil a day. China has a billion more people than us. Not a billion, a billion more. They have a billion more people than us, and we consume nearly four times what they do. In fact, if you distilled all of our oil that we consume into gallon containers, it is 147,000 gallon containers every day that we go through. That if you stretch them all across the world, it would circle the equator six times. Six times. That not only affects how we're getting the oil, it affects how much is left, it affects what's going into the atmosphere. It's huge. Half of the world spends on all of their goods combined what we spend on garbage bags. That's unfreaking believable to me. Half of the world spends on all goods combined, everything they, half of the world spends on all goods combined, the total mass of it, what America spends only on garbage bags. That's amazing, man. I know for me, I feel like I got to start doing something about this. When I take out my garbage on Tuesday nights, man, I roll these things out, these huge, massive, like, these things, they seem like this large, and, you know, I got a crane I got to rent to pull up my garbage, but they're sitting out there, actually, about yo big, and two of them, got two of them, and then I'll have, like, the recycling thing down there, and by the way, you know, it's one of the little myths that people do is, you know, recycling all gets thrown away. It doesn't. It actually gets recycled. People say, oh, recycling's ridiculous. No, they really do recycle it. There really is like less trees that are taken down, you know, when you recycle, less things that are strip mined when you do. But anyway, I come out on Tuesday nights. I got these huge things. And you know what else I do? Sometimes I still have garbage bags. I got a pile beside it. When I was a little kid, I grew up in a family of five and my parents had those Oscar the Grouch cans. Remember those things? Those little metal things that were like, you know, like yo big, those Oscar the Grouch deals. And I'm not sure what happened in my life from when I was 12, family of five, this, to when 41, you know, all I know is I'm being more aware of these things. I don't know what this means for you. I really don't know. I kind of counsel us the way I would counsel us if we want to get in shape physically. Just go up one notch. Just go up one notch. Don't change everything. Go to Diet Coke. Don't change everything. Just start with water. Don't change everything. Just go to a banana instead of a Snicker bar. Don't change everything, but just go up the steps instead of the elevator. I mean, just one notch. And maybe that's what we need to do. When you figure out your life, just one notch. Maybe some of us are building a new house, and maybe there's a product that might cost a little more, but it's a little more environmentally friendly. Do that. I know when we put our heating system in a while ago, we bought a higher efficiency one, even though it cost more because we would be better on the environment. Maybe it is you're going to be carrying mugs around more often as opposed to disposable stuff. Maybe you're going to do dishes more. Maybe it's you're going to... I don't know what all I'm saying is. You know, if someone was coming into your house and messing it over, man, you want to do something about it. You know, I am ashamed, personally, of myself. I'm ashamed that every time I've given this message today, yesterday, that I find myself being more concerned that people don't misunderstand me and they don't like me. I'm ashamed that I'm more concerned that you're going to put some label on me that I don't want on me and you're going to like be all mad at me. I'm more concerned about that than I am that my dad's house is getting messed over. I'm sickened by that. It's my dad's house. Dad created this beautiful thing, and for a long, long time, I've just been cheering on, just indiscriminately blowing cigar smoke into the drapes at Dad's house. And for a long time, I've just said, oh, there's no hole in the roof, let it out, whatever. And I'm just wrestling that in deeper degrees right now. God, I want to say, on behalf of me, and there's some in here that would agree with this, I just want to say I'm sorry. I have to publicly say I've been wrong. I publicly say I'm sorry for devaluing the custom design home that declares your beauty. And I'm also sorry for thinking less of people that have been ahead of me on this one. I was thinking about this last night. Guy came up to me. I'd never seen him before, but his dad is a conservative pastor. He said, my dad and I just always had a great relationship. Until I graduated college and decided to go into a field that was related to environment. He said immediately there was a wedge between us. And they're now in counseling. It's like he said the relationship is shattered just because I'm choosing to honor the environment. God, I don't want to hug trees. I want to hug you. But I want to recognize that those trees, something you created, and I just can't be about destroying them simply because I can. We're stunned. I am stunned by who you are. By who you are. You are the God, the greatest engineer and artist that will ever be. You are the Lord of all creation.